his thumb skimming the hypersensitive skin of my inner thigh. Don't stop. I'll die if he does. Fuck, Violet. He groans, slipping his hand between my thighs. Never mind. That is how I want him to say my name from now on. Just like that. He guides the fabric of my underwear across my clit, and my back arches at the burst of pleasure that radiates through my body, so sweet I can taste it. He captures my mouth with his again, and in a hungry assault, his tongue sliding against mine as his fingers stroke me through the fabric, expertly using it for friction. I try to rock my hips against his hand for more, but my feet dangle off the desk, robbing me of leverage. I can only have what he decides to give. Touch me, I demand, my fingernails biting into the back of his strong neck, desire pounding through me like a drumbeat. His voice is ragged against my mouth. If I get my hands on you, really honestly get my hands on you, I don't know if I'll be able to stop. He would. I know it in my soul. That's why I trust him with my body. My heart? It isn't playing into this decision. Stop being so fucking honorable and fuck me, Zayden. His eyes flare, and then he kisses me like I'm the heir he's been missing, like his life depends on it. And I think mine just might. His fingers slide under my underwear and stroke my slickened core, and a moan tumbles from my lips. His touch is electric. So damn soft. He kisses me deeply as his fingers touch and tease, making that sweet coil of pleasure tighten in my core. I dig my nails into his shoulder, my back arching as he makes tighter and tighter circles against my swollen clit. I bet you taste just as good as you feel. Pleasure shudders through me, a living, breathing fire beneath my skin. More. It's all I'm capable of saying, demanding as my skin flushes and my pulse skyrockets. I'm going to combust, to burst into flames, and all I can do is whimper against his mouth as he slides one finger inside me. My muscles clench around him, and he works in a second. You're so fucking hot, his voice drops, sounding like it's been scraped over coals. It might damn us both. But I can't wait to feel you come around my cock. Oh, gods, that mouth. I throw my hands back against the wall for leverage, knocking something loose as my hips roll. Something shatters on the floor to the left as I ride his thrusting fingers. He curls them against my inner walls, and I gasp, my thighs locking around his leather-clad hips. And when he uses his thumb to stroke my clit, the friction and pressure push me to the edge of mindless bliss. I cry out, and he covers the sound with his mouth, kissing with devious strokes of his tongue that match the movement of his fingers within me. Power surges rippling through my bones, and I grab onto Zayden even harder, surprised at the unexpected rush of crackling energy. Look at you. You're fucking beautiful, Violet. Let go for me. His words curl around my mind, his mouth fused to mine, and the intimacy of it pushes me to the limit of pleasure, and then right over it. He swallows my cry as my back bows, the first wave of my orgasm washing over me, releasing that tight coil of tension in a burst of sparks at the edge of my vision, breaking me into a million scattered stars. Lightning strikes outside my window, flashing light through the room again and again as he strokes me with an expertise that kicks the first climax into a second. Zayden, I moan as the pleasure ebbs and flares again. He grins and slides his fingers from my body, and I'm nothing but ragged breaths and raw hunger as I reach for his shirt. I want it off now. He accommodates my urgency, ripping off the fabric, and then we're kissing again, all swirling tongues and roaming hands. The feel of his skin under my fingertips is divine, impossibly soft over yards of hard muscle. I trace the lines of his back, memorizing the dips and hollows as sinew ripples with every move he makes. I need you. No, I gasp and reach for the buttons of his leathers. You know what you're saying? He asks as I shove the fabric and any cloth beneath past his hips, freeing the thick length of his cock. It's hot and hard in my hand, and the moan that rips from his lips makes me feel invincible. I'm asking you to fuck me. I arch up and kiss him. He groans, dragging my hips to the edge of the desk, then working my underwear down my legs, leaving me bare. My pulse skyrockets. I take the fertility suppressant. Of course we both do. The last thing anyone wants are little quadrant babies running around, but it's better said than sorry. Same. He grips my hips, lifting me for a better angle, and the head of his cock rubs against my clit. I gasp and his eyes lock with mine. The hunger I see etched in every tense line of his body is my undoing. I don't care if it damns us. I need him. No more holding back. Not anymore. I reach between us, guiding the head of his cock to my entrance. But this position is shit. He's considerably taller than the desk. And if I wasn't so desperate for him, I'd laugh. But I am. I arch, but it doesn't help. Every second we wait feels like it stretches on for a decade. Fucking desk, he swears. My thoughts, exactly. His biceps flex as he lifts me by the backs of my thighs, and I wrap my arms around his neck and my legs around his waist, my dressing gown caught between us as he pivots. Our mouths meet in a ravenous kiss as my back hits the armoire. But I barely blink, too consumed with the stroke of his tongue, the feel of him between my thighs. Shit, are you all right? He asks. I'm fine. You won't break me. He pushes inside that first, tight inch of me, and I gasp at the fit, the stretch. More. I'm too busy kissing him to speak. I need all of you. You're going to be the death of me, Violet. Whatever's left of his control slips, and he takes me completely with one hard thrust. I moan into the kiss, deep. He's so fucking deep that I feel him everywhere. Tell me you're all right. He's already moving, thank gods. I'm perfect. Better than perfect. Power blazes beneath my skin again, buzzing in wordless, frenzied demand. You feel so fucking good, he slams back into me again and again as he sets a brutal, steady pace, his mouth sliding down my neck as his hand rises to cup my breast. I can't even think around the maddening pleasure as my back pounds the armoire door with every thrust, filling the room with the sound of our straining bodies and creaking wood. Every stroke is better than the last. My breaths stutter. Fuck, I'm never going to get enough of you, am I? He says, his face buried in my neck as I arch into him. Shut up and fuck me, Ryerson. Tomorrow is soon enough for regrets. Reaching up, I grasp the top edge of the armoire with one hand so I can rock back with more force, meeting the drive of his hips, taking him deeper, harder. He drags one of my nightgown straps off my shoulder, and the cool night air kisses the hardened peak of my nipple, a heartbeat before his hot mouth covers it. The sensations spiral, spinning and coiling, forming a tight knot of pleasure so deep within me, the tension is sublimely unbearable. The armoire door groans, then splinters off the hinges, and Zayden's shadows whip out, protecting me as the frame snaps and wood crashes around us. My power flares, rising in answer to his, sizzling beneath my skin as I grab a hold of his shoulders, my mouth finding his. There's no stopping. We can't stop. Fuck, he curses as he takes me over and over, never stopping, turning us again so there's cloth against my back. But it's not the bed. It's the curtains shoved to the side of the window. Energy crackles again and our mouths meet, and still he drives on, winding that knot inside me painfully tighter with every movement. And the power, it's too much. It's burning me, heating my blood with the need for release. Zayden, I cry out, simultaneously writhing, yet holding on to him like he's the only thing anchoring me to the earth. I've got you, Violet, he promises, his breath ragged, pants against my lips. Let it out. Lightning whips through me, flashing so brightly that my eyes slam shut. Heat flares above me as thunder cracks immediately. And I smell smoke. Shit, Zayden's power fills the room, eclipsing what light we had. And the curtain falls, but we're moving before the charred fabric can so much as touch my skin. That knot of pleasure builds to a breaking point as he takes me to the floor, and finally, I have all of his weight as he drives into me. Shadows fall away, and the sight of him above me, his dark gaze locked on mine in intense concentration, is the most beautiful sight I've ever seen. So very beautiful. I punctuate each word with a kiss. He draws back, his eyes searching mine for a heartbeat or two, before he devastates me with another kiss that has me straining for more, rocking my hips against his. This man kisses with his whole body, rolling his hips in time with the thrust of his tongue, bracing just enough of his weight so I can breathe while stroking his chest over my hypersensitive nipples. He keeps me on the same edge he's riding. And I don't know how much longer I can take it before I set this entire room on fire. I need, my frantic eyes search his. Where are my words? I know. He claims my mouth again and reaches between us, using those talented fingers to stroke me into another orgasm, and light flashes again, followed by thunder and darkness as I come apart under him. Pleasure takes me in waves, rolling through me again and again until all I can do is clutch Zayden's shoulders and ride it out in blissful surrender. Beautiful, he whispers. The second I come down, his rhythm breaks, and he presses my knee up toward my chest and takes me even deeper. I rock my hips up to meet his, sweat beating on our skin as I watch him unravel with rapt fascination. I love his loss of control just as much as I fear my own. And when I swirl my hips, he groans, arching his neck as he thrusts once, twice. On the third, he shouts, then shudders within me, and his power lashes out in streaks of shadows, the force splitting the wooden target on the other side of the window. Pieces fly, and Zayden throws out another wave of darkness that lasts just long enough to shield us from the debris. Then the shadows retreat and daggers clatter to the ground behind me. He looks as shocked and as enthralled as I feel as we lay there, staring at each other, our chests heaving in the aftermath of what can only be described as complete and utter madness. I've never lost control like that, he says, bracing his weight on one arm and brushing my hair back from my face with the other. The move is so gentle, so at odds with what we've just experienced, that I can't help but blink, then smile. Me neither. The smile morphs into a full-out grin. Not that I've ever had power to lose control of before. He laughs and rolls us to his side, keeping me close and cushioning my head with his biceps. I sniff at the smoke in the air. Did I? Set the curtains on fire? He lifts a brow. Yes. Oh, I can't find it in me to be embarrassed, so I brush the backs of my fingers across the stubble along his jawline. And you put it out? Yes. Right before I destroyed your throwing targets. He grimaces. I'll get you a new one. I glance over at the armoire. Yep, he lifts his brows. And I'm pretty sure you need a new chair, too. I didn't even get the man's pants entirely off, and my dressing gown is haphazardly hanging from one shoulder. Frighteningly. Perfect. He cups the side of my face. We should get you cleaned up and to sleep. We can worry about your room tomorrow. Ironically, your bed is the only thing we didn't wreck. I sit up to confirm that the bed made it, and Zayden does the same next to me, leaning forward. Immediately, I lose interest in everything but the muscled lines of his back and the navy blue relic Sigale transferred to him. I reach out and trace the dragon relic on his back, my fingers lingering on the raised silver scars, and he stiffens. They're all short, thin lines. Too precise to be a whip. No rhyme or reason to their pattern, but never intersecting. What happened? I whisper, holding my breath. You really don't want to know. He's tense but doesn't move away from my touch. I do. They don't look accidental. Someone hurt him deliberately, maliciously. And it makes me want to hunt that person down and do the same to them. His jaw flexes as he looks over his shoulder, and his eyes meet mine. I bite my lip, knowing this moment can go either way. He can shut me out, like always, or he can actually let me in. There's a lot of them, I murmur, dragging my fingers down his spine. 107. He looks away. That number makes my stomach lurch, and then my hand pauses. 107. That's the number Liam mentioned. That's how many kids under the age of majority carry the rebellion relic. Yeah. I shift so I can see his face. What happened, Zayden? He brushes my hair back, and the look that passes over his face is so close to tender that it makes my heart stutter. I saw the opportunity to make a deal, he says softly, and I took it. What kind of deal leaves you with scars like that? Conflict rages in his eyes, but then he sighs. The kind where I take personal responsibility for the loyalty of the 107 kids the rebellion's leaders left behind. And in return, we're allowed to fight for our lives in the Riders' Quadrant, instead of being put to death like our parents. He averts his gaze. I chose the chance of death over the certainty. The cruelty of the offer and the sacrifice he made to save the others hits like a physical blow. I cradle his cheek and guide his face back to mine. So if any of them betray Navarre, I lift my brows. Then my life is forfeit. The scars are a reminder. It's why Liam says he owes him everything. I'm so sorry that happened to you. Especially when he wasn't the one who led the rebellion. He looks at me like he sees into the very depths of who I am. You have nothing to apologize for. I grab his hand as he moves to stand. Stay. I shouldn't. Two lines appear between his brows as he searches my eyes. People will talk. When did I ever give you the impression that I give a fuck what people think? I use his earlier words against him and sit up, curling my hand around the section of his neck that bears his relic. Stay with me, Zayden. Don't make me beg. We both know this is a bad idea. Then it's our bad idea. His shoulders dip, and I know I've won. He's mine for the night. We take turns sneaking out long enough to clean up, and then he slides into bed behind me. Only within these walls, he says quietly, and I understand what he means. Only within these walls, I agree. It's not like we're in a relationship or anything. That would be disastrous given the chain of command. We're riders, after all. I just don't trust my temper if anyone says, I brush a kiss over his mouth, silencing him. I know what you're saying. It's sweet. He nips at my skin.
I'm not sweet. Please don't mistake any part of me for soft or kind. That will only get you hurt. And whatever you do,
he buries his face in my neck, inhaling deeply.
Don't fall for me.
I stroke my hand over his marked arm and pray that's not exactly what I'm doing. This overwhelming juxtaposition of longing and satisfaction in my chest has to be the after effects of coming not once, but three times, right? It can't be more.
Violence?
I look out my window at the infinite black sky and change the topic, my eyelids growing heavier by the second.
Why did you guess I could wield lightning?
He stretches just enough to tuck my head under his chin.
I thought you did it the first night Taryn channeled power to you, but I wasn't sure, so I didn't say anything.
Really? I blink, thinking back, but my brain is full of a pleasant, dull hum as sleep fights to pull me under.
When?
My eyes drift shut. His arms tighten around me as he tucks me closer, the backs of my thighs pressed tight against his pants as I start to drift off.
The first time you kissed me.
When I wake, Zayden is gone. But that's not exactly a surprise. Him staying the night to begin with? Now that was the shocker. Finding a jar on my nightstand with a handful of spring violets? My heart swells. I'm in so much fucking trouble. He even moved all the debris to a pile in the corner, which means he must have used his shadows while I was sleeping because I didn't hear a thing. I'm still exhausted, but I dress and pin my hair up quickly, noting the sun has already risen. With Liam in the infirmary, I'll be solo for my archives trip today, but I might be able to sneak in to see him on the way back. I'm lacing my boots when there's a knock at my door. You have got to be kidding, I say loudly enough for the knocker to hear. Just because Liam is healing doesn't mean I need another. I wrench the door open and stumble over the last word. Bodyguard. Professor Carr stands in my hallway, his hair standing on end as he looks at me with scientific appraisal, then lifts his eyebrows as he stares past me into the wreckage of my room. We have work to do.
I have archives duty, I argue. He snorts. You're off archives duty until we can be sure you're not going to burn the place down. Lightning and paper don't mix well. Trust me, Sorengale, the scribes aren't going to want you anywhere near their precious books. And from the looks of it, you can't even control your powers in your sleep.
I try to ignore the sting of his words, since he's far off, but end up following him down the hall when he leaves.
Where are we going?
Somewhere you won't start a forest fire, he says without looking back.
20 minutes later, we're in the flight field, and to my surprise, Taryn is saddled.
How the hell did you do that?
He chuffs in indignation.
As if I'd let them design something I couldn't figure out how to get on myself. Remember where you get your power from, Silver One.
How's Endarna? I ask as Professor Carr thrusts a satchel into my hands. What's this for?
Sleeping, but she's fine,
Taryn promises. Breakfast, Carr answers. With all the wielding you're about to do, you're going to need it.
He climbs onto his orange dagger tail, and after I mount Taryn and strap in, we're airborne. The bite of spring wind stings my cheeks as we fly deep into the mountain range, and I'm thankful I dressed in flight leathers this morning, thinking I'd have a session before lunch. We land almost a half hour later, high above the tree line. I shiver and rub my arms to fight off the low temperatures that come with high altitude.
Don't worry, you won't be cold for long,
Carr assures, dismounting and pulling a small tome from his pocket. According to what I read last night, this particular ability has the power to overheat your system. Hence, he gestures around us. Plus, there's not much to burn up here, is there? And no witnesses if he decides to break my neck, either. I glance at him quickly before looking away, undoing the buckles of my saddle, then sliding down Tarn's foreleg. Don't leave me.
Never. I'll burn him alive before he takes a single step toward you.
Exactly. He studies me carefully, and I avoid meeting his eyes as I check the wrap on my knee to make sure it hasn't slipped under my leathers. It's always intriguing to me how nature finds the balance. I'm not sure I know what you mean, Professor. This kind of power found in one so... He sighs. Would you not call yourself fragile? I am who I am, I bristle. I've never given this particular professor any reason to think of me as different. It's not an insult, cadet. He shrugs, looking at the saddle. It's a balance. In the course of my duties, I've found a correlation of sorts that keeps a system of checks on power. Yours seems to be your body. A growl rumbles in Tarn's chest as he edges Carr's smaller dragon out of his space. Your dragon doesn't trust me, Carr states, like it's an academic problem to be solved. And considering he's the most powerful of them in the quadrant at the moment, but not the continent, Tarn admits. That means you don't trust me either, Cadet Sorengale. He holds my gaze, and the mountaintop wind makes his white hair dance like feathers. Why is that?
No point lying.
Other than you calling me frail? I stay at the base of Tarn's foreleg, ready to mount if necessary. I was there the day you killed Jeremiah. His signet manifested, and you snapped his neck like a twig in front of all of us. Carr tilts his head in thought.
Yes, well.
He was in a considerable amount of panic, and it's widely known that intrinsics aren't allowed to live. I ended his suffering before he could see the end coming. I'll never understand why mind reading is a death sentence. I place my hand on Tarn's leg like I can absorb his strength, even though I already feel it flowing through me.
Because knowledge is power. As a general's daughter, you should know that. We can't have someone walking around with unfettered access to classified material. They're a security risk to the entire kingdom.
And yet, Dane is living.
Because Atos will be useful to them as long as they can keep him under their control.
Tarn blasts a puff of steam over my head, and the orange dagger tail backs up even more.
His power is also limited to touch, so more controllable.
Now, you don't have to trust me, and you can even wield from your seat on your dragon if you like. But I hope you believe me when I tell you that I have no plans of killing you, Cadet Sorengale. Losing an asset like you would be a tragedy for the war effort.
An asset. And the fact that you bonded Tarn makes you and Ryerson the most coveted pair of riders this kingdom has seen in far too long. If I could offer a piece of advice.
His eyes narrow. Please do. At least he's brutally honest, so I know where I stand with him.
Keep your loyalties clear. You and Ryerson both have exceptional, lethal power that any rider would be envious of. But together,
his bushy brows furrow.
You would be a formidable enemy who command could simply not afford to let exist. Do you understand what I'm saying?
His voice softens. Navarre is my home, Professor. I will give my life to defend it, just like every Sorengale who has ridden before me.
Excellent, he nods. Now let's get to work. The sooner you can contain the lightning, the sooner we can both stop freezing our asses off.
Good point. I look out over the range. You just want me to... I gesture to the mountains around us.
Preferably anywhere but right here, yes.
I stare out at the mountains in the distance. I'm not really sure what I did to call it before. It was an emotional reaction.
And what happened last night definitely isn't up for discussion.
Interesting. He jots something down in his notebook with a piece of charcoal. You've wielded lightning besides yesterday's display during the war games?
I debate keeping my answer to myself, but my silence isn't going to help.
A few times.
And both times were the results of emotional reactions? Tarn snorts and I smack his foreleg with the back of my hand.
Yes.
Well, then start there. Ground in your power and try to feel whatever it was you were feeling.
He goes back to his notebook.
Should I get the wing leader?
Tarn flat out laughs in my head.
Shut up.
I ground both feet in my archives and power flows around me, through me. And Darna's golden light is there too, but it's softened from having been drained yesterday. And high above me swirl the inky black shadows I know represent the connection to Zayden.
Problems? Zayden asks, as if he feels my inquiry.
And what are you doing so far away?
Training with Carr. My cheeks heat at the sound of his low voice.
And how do you know how far away I am anyway?
Get stronger in wielding and you'll be able to do it too. There's nowhere in existence you could go that I wouldn't find you, Violence.
The promise should be a threat, but it's not. It's too damn comforting for that. Right now, I'd settle for wielding some lightning. Carr is staring at me, and it's about to get really fucking awkward if I can't figure out how. Images of me flood my mind. It's last night, except I'm somehow seeing it through Zayden's eyes, feeling the unmistakable burn of insatiable desire. My control slips. No, it's Zayden's control slipping as I moan beneath him, my hips riding his hand, my nails biting into his skin with the pain that borders on pleasure as I writhe. Gods, I need... No, he needs me. His hunger walks the line of starvation to know my touch, my taste, the feel of power floods my entire system, crackling along my skin, and light flashes behind my closed eyes. The images stop, and my feelings are once again my own. And fuck if I'm not so turned on that I have to shift my weight to ease the ache between my thighs.
Good job, Professor Carr nods, jotting something down.
I can't believe you just did that.
You're welcome.
My cheeks are flaming hot as I lift the backs of my hands to my skin.
See, I told you, Carr lifts the notebook. The last lightning wielder said it made them overheat. Now do it again.
Tarn chortles.
Not a single fucking word out of you, I warn.
This time, I focus on the feeling of the power rush and not what got it there. Opening every sense and letting white-hot energy course through me, gathering to a breaking point. Then I release it, and lightning strikes more than a mile away.
Well, look at that. I am a certified badass.
Maybe you could work at aiming it this time?
Professor Carr peers over his notebook.
Just remember not to exhaust the physical strength with which you control the power. No one wants to see you burn out. A power like Tarn's will eat you alive if you can't contain it.
Lightning strikes 5 more times before I'm exhausted, and none of it hits where I was aiming.
This is going to be harder than I thought.
Chapter 31.
A quote from Royal Proclamation of King Tari the Wise.
July 1st, the anniversary of the Battle of Orisha, is hereby proclaimed Reunification Day and will be celebrated throughout Navarre on this date every year to honor the lives lost during the war to save our kingdom from separatists and those saved by the Treaty of Orisha. There's a knock at my door as I take an armful of clothes from the skeletal remains of what used to be my armoire. Come in, I call out, dumping them on the bed. The door opens and Zayden walks in, his hair windblown like he's just come from the flight field, and my pulse jumps. I just wanted, he starts, then pauses, surveying the wreckage of my room from last night. Somehow I'd convinced myself today that we hadn't done that much damage, but yeah, it's, he looks at me and we both crack a smile. Look, this doesn't have to be awkward or anything. I shrug, trying to ease the tension. We're both adults. His scarred brow rises. Good, because I wasn't going to make it that way. But the least I can do is help you clean up. His attention shifts to the armoire, and he winces. I swear, it didn't look quite that ruined in the darkness when I left this morning. Turns out you set more than a few trees on fire last night, too. Took two water wielders to get them out. My cheeks heat. You took off early. I try to make my tone as nonchalant as possible as I walk toward my desk, which miraculously survived, and bend down to gather a few of my books we'd knocked to the floor. I had a leadership meeting and needed to get an early start. His arm brushes against mine as he leans down and picks up my favorite book of fables, the one Mira slipped into my rucksack once we'd gotten back to Montserrat that night. Oh, my chest lightens. That makes perfect sense, I stand, putting my texts on the desk. So it wasn't because I snore or anything. No, a corner of his mouth rises. How did training with cargo? Nice subject change. I can wield, but I can't aim. And it's completely exhausting. My mouth purses, thinking back to the first strike I wielded. You know, you were kind of an asshole on the flight field yesterday. His grip tightens on the book. Yes, I told you what I thought you needed to hear to get through the moment. I know you don't like other people to see you vulnerable, and you were vulnerable, I finish. He nods. If it makes you feel better. I couldn't keep anything down after the first time I killed anyone either. I don't think less of you for having a reaction like that. Just means you still have your humanity. So do you, I say gently, taking the book from him. That's debatable, says the man who has 107 scars on his back. It's not. Not to me. He looks away, and I know he's going to have his defenses up any second now. Tell me something real, I say, desperate to keep him with me. Like what? He asks, just like he did before when we were flying, when he left me sitting on that mountain when I had the nerve to ask about his scars. Like, my mind races, looking for something to ask. Like where you went the night I found you in the courtyard. His brow furrows. You're going to have to be more specific than that. Third years get sent away all the time. You had Bodhi with you. It was right before the gauntlet. I nervously run my tongue over my lower lip. Oh, he picks up another book and sets it on the desk, clearly stalling while he decides whether or not he'll open up to me. I would never tell anyone anything you tell me, I promise. I hope you know that. I know. You never told a soul about what you saw under the tree last fall. He rubs the back of his neck. Athbean. You can't know why or ask anything else, but that's where we were. Oh, that definitely wasn't what I expected, but not out of the ordinary for cadets to run something to an outpost. Thank you for telling me. I move to put the book back and see that the binding is definitely worse for wear after we knocked the antique tome off the desk last night. Damn. I open the back cover and see that it's split at the binding. Something is peeking out. What is that? Zayden asks, looking over my shoulder. Not sure. Balancing the heavy book with one hand, I tug what looks to be a stiff piece of parchment free from where it's been tucked behind the binding. Gravity shifts as I recognize my father's handwriting, and it's dated just a few months before his death.
My Violet, by the time you find this, you'll most likely be in the Scribe Quadrant. Remember that folklore is passed from one generation to the next to teach us about our past. If we lose it, we lose the links to our past. It only takes one desperate generation to change history, even erase it. I know you'll make the right choice when the time comes. You have always been the best of both your mother and me. Love, Dad.
My brow furrows and I pass the letter to Zayden, flipping through the book. The tales are all familiar, and I can still hear my father's voice reading every word, as if I were still a child curled on his lap after a long day.
That's cryptic, Zayden remarks.
He got a little cryptic in the years after Brennan died, I admit softly. Losing my brother made my father even more reclusive. I only really got to spend time with him because I was always in the archives, studying to be a scribe. The pages flutter as I flip through stories of an ancient kingdom that spanned from ocean to ocean, and a great war among three brothers who fought to control the magic in this mystical land. Some of the fables tell stories of the first riders who learned to bond with dragons, and how those bonds could turn on the rider if they tried to consume too much power. Others talk of a great evil that spread across the land as man became corrupted by dark magic and turned into creatures known as Venon, who created flocks of winged creatures called Wyvern and scourged the land of all magic in their thirst for more power. Another talks about the dangers of wielding power from the ground instead of the skies, as one could easily start drawing magic from the earth and eventually be driven mad. One of the purposes of the fables is to teach children about the dangers of too much power. No one wants to become a Venon. They're the monsters that hide beneath our beds when we have nightmares, and we certainly never want to try to control magic without a dragon to ground us. But that's all they are, children's bedtime stories. So why did my dad leave me this cryptic note and hide it inside the book?
What do you think he was trying to tell you? Zayden asks.
I don't know. Every fable in this book is about how too much power corrupts, so maybe he felt someone in leadership was corrupt. I glance up at Zayden and joke. I certainly wouldn't be surprised if General Melgren ripped a mask off one day and revealed he was a terrifying Venon. That man has always given me the creeps. Zayden chuckles.
Well, let's hope not that. My dad used to say Venon were biding their time in the Barrens, and one day were coming to get us, if we didn't eat our vegetables.
He glances out the window to his left, and I know he's remembering his father.
He said one day there would be no magic left in the kingdom if we weren't careful.
I'm sorry, I start, but when he tenses, I decide a subject change is what he really needs. So, which mess should we tackle first?
I have a better idea of how to spend our night, he says as he puts another pile of clothes on my bed.
Oh? I glance over and catch his eyes darkening as he stares at my mouth. My pulse immediately quickens, the thought of touching him sending a burst of energy through me.
Don't fall for me.
His words from last night cut a sharp contrast to the way he's looking at me now. I take a step backward. You said not to fall for you. Did you change your mind?
Absolutely not.
His jaw tenses. Right. I don't expect that to hurt as much as it does, which is part of the problem. I'm already too emotionally involved to separate out the sex, no matter how phenomenal it is. Here's the thing. I don't think I can separate sex from emotion when it comes to you.
Well, shit. Now I've said it.
We're already too close for that. And if we hook up again, I'm going to eventually fall for you. My heart pounds at the rushed confession, waiting for his response.
You won't.
Something akin to panic flares in his eyes and he crosses his arms. I swear I can actually see the man building his defenses against his own feelings.
You don't really know me, not at my core.
And whose fault is that? I know enough, I argue softly. And we'd have all the time in the world to figure it out if you'd stop acting like such an emotional chicken shit and just admit that you're going to fall for me too, if we keep this up. There's no way he would have designed that saddle, spent all that time training me to fight and fly if he didn't feel something. He's going to have to fight for this too, or it will never work.
I have absolutely no intention of falling for you, Soren Gale.
His eyes narrow, and he enunciates every word, like I could possibly take that any other way.
Fuck that. He let me in. He told me about his scars. He had an arsenal crafted for me. He cares. He's just as wrapped up in this as I am, even if he's shitty at showing it.
Ouch, I wince. Well, it's apparent that you're not ready to admit where this is going. So yeah, I think it's best we agree that this was just a one-time thing. I force my shoulders to shrug. We both needed to blow off some steam, and we did, right?
Right, he agrees, apprehension lining his forehead.
So the next time I see you, I'll just act as cool as you are right now and pretend that I'm not remembering what it feels like to have you sliding inside me.
Warm and hard. He really does have an incredible body, but he doesn't get to dictate what I do with my heart.
He stalks forward with a smirk, his gaze warming every inch of my body.
And I'll just pretend that I'm not remembering the feel of your soft thighs around my hips, or those breathy little sounds you make right before you come.
His teeth rake over his lower lip, and it takes all my willpower not to suck that lip into my mouth. And I'll ignore the memory of your hands biting into my hips, pinning me to the armoire so you could take me deeper, and your mouth on my throat.
Easy.
My lips part as I retreat, my heart jumping in the best way when he follows, backing me against the wall.
His hands rest next to my head as he leans into my space, his lips curving into a half smile.
Then I guess I'll ignore the memory of how hot and slick you feel around my cock, and how you cry out for more until all I can think about is how to push every physical limit to be exactly what you need.
Shit, he's better at this game than I am. Heat flushes my skin. I want him closer. I want exactly what I had last night, but I want more. His breath hits my lips in ragged pants, and I'm in no better condition.
Fuck it. I can have him, right? I can take exactly what he's offering and enjoy every single minute. We can shred every piece of furniture in this room and then move to his.
But where will that leave us in the morning?
Right here, both wanting and only one of us brave enough to take. And I deserve more than a relationship that's only on his terms.
You want me. I put my hand on his chest and feel his heart pounding. And I know that scares you, even though I want you just as badly. He stiffens. But here's the thing. I hold his gaze, knowing he could bolt at any second. You don't get to dictate how I feel. You might give the orders out there, but not in here. You don't get to tell me we can fuck, but I can't fall for you. That's not fair. You can only respect what I choose to do. So we're not doing this again until I want to risk my heart. And if I fall, then that's my problem, not yours. You're not responsible for my choices.
His jaw clenches once, twice, and then he pushes off the wall, giving me space. I think that's for the best. I'm graduating soon, and who knows where I'll end up. Besides, you and I are chained together because of Sigail and Tarn, which complicates everything. He retreats one step at a time, the distance more than just physical. Besides, with all that pretending, I'm sure we'll eventually forget last night ever happened. The way we're looking at each other tells me neither of us is ever going to forget. And he can avoid it all he wants, but we're going to end up right here, time and again, until he's willing to recognize what this is. Because if there's one thing I know for certain, it's that I'm going to fall for this man, if I haven't already. And he's halfway there too, whether he realizes it or not. Turning my back on him, I walk to the shattered halves of my throwing target and pick them up before heading back across the room. I never figured you for a liar, Zayden. I shove the halves at his chest. You can get me a new one when you're ready to come to your senses. Then we'll blow off some steam. I throw the aggravating man out.
Did you hear that King Tari is celebrating reunification day here? Sawyer asks as he swings his leg over the bench beside me at lunch. Really? I attack my roasted chicken with zeal. Since I've been training every day with Carr, my appetite somewhat resembles a bottomless pit. At least he only drags me to that mountaintop for an hour a day, but still, by the time breakfast comes, I'm ravenous. After a month, I still can't aim lightning for shit. But I'm up to about 20 strikes an hour, so that's an improvement. Glancing down the tables, I catch Zayden's eye as he eats with the leadership on the dais. He looks scrumptious this morning. Even the broody little cloud that follows him everywhere has a certain appeal as he rolls his eyes at something Garrick says. Don't look at me like that. Like what? I arch an eyebrow. His gaze flashes to mine. Like you're thinking about the sparring gym last night.
Well, duh, Rhiannon says across from me. That's why Devera has about 500 black dress uniforms in commons right now. Where the king travels, so does the party.
Well, now that you mention it, my tongue flicks over my lower lip, remembering how his hips pinned mine to the mat after everyone had left for the night. How close we both came to giving in to the pulsing need between us. His jaw flexes, and his grip tightens on his fork. Seriously, I can't think when you look at me like that.
Really? I figured those were for graduation,
Riddick questions.
Imogen scoffs. Like anyone dresses up for graduation. It's basically a giant formation where Panchek says,
look, you lived, good job, come get your assignments and then pack your shit and leave.
Everyone laughs at her spot-on imitation. You're the one with the ridiculous rule about not falling for each other. I remind him. You're still looking, he forces his attention back to his plate. You make it hard to look away. I miss his mouth on my skin, the feel of his body pressed against mine. I miss the look on his face when he watched me come undone. But I miss the feeling of him curled around me in sleep more. I'm over here keeping my hands and memories to myself because you asked me to, and you're fucking me with your eyes. That's not playing fair.
I drop my fork and everyone at the table turns to stare.
You all right over there?
Rhiannon asks, her eyebrows rising.
Yep.
I nod, ignoring the flush of heat creeping up my neck. I'm great.
Liam sets his glass down and glances between Zayden and me, shaking his head as he fights a smile.
Of course he knows what's going on. He'd have to be completely oblivious not to, considering he helped Zayden and Garrick move in the new armoire. told you to stop staring. There's laughter in his voice, but his face is as expressionless as ever. I tap my fork on my plate in pure frustration. You know what? Fuck this. Two can play at this game. If you'd just man up and admit there's something between us, I would strip down to my skin so you could see every single inch of me. And once I had you begging, I'd drop down to my knees, undo those flight leathers you're wearing, and wrap my lips around, Zayden chokes. Every head in the dining hall turns his way, and Garrick pounds on his back until Zayden waves him off, taking a drink of his water. I grin, which earns me about 6 looks of confusion from our table and 1 set of rolled eyes from Liam.
You're going to be the death of me.
We're only 10 days away from graduation, and I'm counting every single one of them. That's when we'll find out how far Zayden is being sent from Bezgaeth. Most brand new lieutenants are given Midland posts, manning the forts along the roads that lead to the border outposts. But someone with Zayden's power? I don't even want to think about how far he'll be. Or why he still hasn't admitted there's something between us. Or even hinted that at least he didn't regret that one night. I'd take that.
Don't fall for me.
I feel a familiar prickle along my scalp, and I know Zayden has filed into the battle brief room with the rest of the remaining cadets and leadership. Professor De Vera jumps right into today's brief, but I find it difficult to pay attention. Today marks 6 years since Brennan was killed. He'd be a captain by now, or maybe even a major, given the way his career had taken off. Maybe he'd be married. Maybe I'd be an aunt. Maybe our father's heart wouldn't have given out that first time from the strain of losing him, or that final time, that spring 2 years ago.
Take me to bed,
I mentally blurt out, then sink down in my seat a little. I don't regret it, though. Today of all days, I need a distraction.
It might be awkward in front of all these people.
I can't see him from where I know he's sitting at the top of the battle brief room, but his words feel like a caress on the back of my neck.
Might be worth it.
And what would you have done differently? De Vera asks, scanning the crowd. I would have asked for reinforcements if I'd known the wards were weakening in the area, Rhiannon answers.
I haven't changed my mind, Violence. There's no future for us.
And when no reinforcements are available? De Vera asks, arching a brow. You have noticed that the graduating classes from the Riders Quadrant are diminishing every year, while the uptick in attacks has cost us another 7 riders and their dragons this year, haven't you? It takes at least a full company of infantry to make up for the loss of 1 rider.
Graduation is 10 days away. The approaching deadline has me on edge.
I would have temporarily pulled riders from the Midland post to help rebuild the wards, Rhiannon answers.
Don't remind me.
Excellent, De Vera nods.
Are you seriously going to leave Bezgaeth without...
Without what? Declaring his undying lust?
Yes. Of course he would.
Zayden is a master of containing his emotions, which is probably why he's so fixed on containing mine, too.
Or is there some other reason he's holding himself back that I'm not considering? The sex was great. Our chemistry? Explosive. We're even friends, though the constant ache in my chest tells me it's gone far beyond that.
If he could just be an asshole, then I'd write that night off as just sex. Ridiculously mind-blowing sex, and move on.
But he's not being an ass. Not usually, at least. And now I understand why he takes his job so seriously. He shoulders the responsibility for every marked one in here. Whatever you're thinking can wait until there's not a room of people between us, he says.
What else do you have for me? Devera continues, calling on a second ear.
It's been a month and a half since we destroyed my room, and we've managed to keep our hands off each other, even though one night wasn't enough to satisfy either of us, if the tension-filled evenings and the sparring mats are any indication. Of course, we both know anything more would only further complicate an already overly complicated situation.
But surely he's not relieving the sexual tension that stretches taut between us with someone else. Surely. The insidious thought spreads with a sickening quickness. I stop listening as my stomach twists at an all-too-real possibility. Is there someone else?
I'm not having this discussion with you right now. Pay attention.
It takes everything I have not to turn around and yell at him. If I've spent every night tossing and turning in my sheets alone while he...
That's a good idea too, Atos, Devera smiles. A very wingleader answer, if I might say so.
Oh gods, Dane's ego is going to be unbearable today during sparring if Devera keeps complimenting him. Sparring. I clasp my pen a little too hard as I remember the way Imogen looked at Zayden that night. Shit. That would make sense. She carries a rebellion relic and definitely isn't the daughter of the woman who killed his father, so she has that going for her too.
Is it Imogen?
I'm going to be sick.
For fuck's sake, Violence.
Is it? I know we said we weren't going there again, but I'm kicking myself for telling him I wanted more now, and for the fact that I should be paying attention instead of fighting with Zayden. At least tell me.
Soren Gale.
Zayden snaps. I freeze, feeling the weight of every gaze on me.
Yes, Ryerson?
Devera prompts. He clears his throat.
If reinforcements were unavailable, I would have asked for Mira Sorengale to temporarily transfer. The wards are strong at Montserrat, and with her signet, she could reinforce